This is Bethany.
And you're listening to Killer Stargazing. On this podcast, we choose a killer, look at their birth chart, and see if we can get a more in-depth look into what makes them tick. And a birth chart, if you didn't know, is a map showing what the positions of the planets were when a person was born. And it's said to determine just about everything about personality, relationships, their potential, etc.
Every week we also have our killer cocktail. This week we are having a don't take candy from strangers. It is cotton candy, whipped vodka, and club soda. As always, the recipe will be posted on our Instagram at Killer Stargazing, so check it out.
Yes, and it's really good.
Delicious.
That being said, if you like true crime and astrology, or you're just curious, grab a drink and let's get into it. Okay, so this week, Bethany is not aware of who our killer is, and I'm going to be telling you the terrible story of Dean Corll, a.k.a. the Candyman, a.k.a. the Pied Piper.
Oh, my.
So have you heard of him before?
I don't think I have.
I hadn't.
I mean, the nicknames are, you know, they're hard to be distinguished to just one thing because, I mean, I know the movie Candyman, yeah. You know, like, but no, I don't think I'm aware of any killer with any of those nicknames.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it before, so I was really interested in researching it, but then I started actually researching it, and I learned it's really fucked up. It involves kids, which is tough to do, you know, for me as a parent, I'm sure other parents too, it's just hard to listen to, so as always, and with the majority of our stories, this will contain graphic content, so be warned. So Dean Arnold Corll was born on December 24th, Christmas Eve, 1939 in Fort Wayne, Indiana. The crimes he committed would be known as the Houston Mass Murders. He murdered at least 28 teenage boys and young men and was active between 1970 and 1973 in Houston, Texas. So let's start with his childhood. He was born to parents Mary Emma Robinson and Arnold Edwin Corll, and he had one brother, Stanley. And their father was really strict with them. He would give out kind of harsh punishments for the smallest mistakes. And their mother was, like, extremely protective over both of them, but especially Dean. Super protective over him. And when they interviewed her later on, after, you know, the crimes that were committed, she never, like, believed it. She never had, like, one bad thing to say about him, like, ever.
Typical, like, mother that, you know, her son can do no wrong.
Yeah, but, like, to an extreme.
Yeah.
So the relationship between his parents was super combative. They were just arguing constantly, and they divorced in 1946. But then their mother moved them to Memphis, Tennessee, so that they could be close to their father, who had just been drafted. And Dean was said to have been a shy and serious child, and he didn't really socialize with other kids at all. He kind of kept to himself, and that he had some health issues. He had an undiagnosed case of rheumatic fever, which is an inflammatory disease that can involve the heart, joints, skin, and brain. And the doctors didn't recognize that he had it until they found out that he had a heart murmur in 1950, and he was told to just, like, avoid PE.
Oh, my gosh. Lucky.
I know. That same year, his parents decided to give it another shot. They got back together, they got remarried, and they moved to Pasadena, Texas. But then in 1953, they divorced again. When Corll was 14, they moved to Vidor, Texas, which was known as a sundown town, which is basically just a town full of racist, awful people who basically if they caught any black person in their town when the sun went down, they would kill them.
That's really a thing, huh?
That's really a thing. Oh, wow. What is that
sundown town? It's, yeah, Lovecraft Country.
Lovecraft Country. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I didn't know that that was a real thing.
Yeah,
It absolutely
that's
was.
Horrible.
Yeah. So, you know, great town that they moved to.
Yeah.
His mother then remarried a traveling clock salesman named Jake West. Ooh. Sounds like an anchorman to me.
It does.
They had a daughter together, Coral's half-sister, Joyce. So, apparently, this Jake West guy got some advice from a pecan nut salesman that they should start a candy company. So Coral's mom and stepfather started a small family candy company named the Pecan Prince. And they operated out of their garage, and they had Dean working day and night for the company, all while he was still going to school. So basically, wow. Dean and his brother Stanley would just, like, run the candy-making machines and pack the product, and their stepdad would sell it along his sales routes. And when he was in high school, he just didn't really have a social life. He was helping out the candy company, and plus he just didn't really like to socialize. Mm. He dated a couple girls, but was mostly just quiet and kept to himself. So Dean didn't have much in common with other serial killers when I was looking into him as far as childhood goes. Like, he wasn't terribly abused, didn't have, like, a serious head trauma from what I could find.
And that really, like, crazy stands out, like, yeah, oh, that's his
dad. Except for one thing, he would torture flying squirrels.
What?
This is not funny, but it's a little funny.
Well, is it just because, like, why flying squirrels?
I don't know.
I mean, and at least it's not cats, but nah. I'm just kidding. That's a weird choice of animal to dislike.
Yeah, and so I laugh because I'm awkward, but he would attack these flying squirrels and kill them, and then he would wrap them around his neck as a necklace. Or just shove them in his boots.
What?
And wear them to school.
Oh, my God. Well, now we know why he didn't have any friends. Please tell me he had a nickname in high school when he was teased about this, because there's no way that you don't tease someone about that, right?
I have no idea. I don't know. Maybe people were just like, don't want to fuck with that guy.
True, true. Yeah, it's beyond, like, that's just someone you avoid completely. Yeah.
Don't talk to that kid. He's fucking weird. He wears squirrels around his neck. So after he graduated high school in 1958, his family moved to Houston to be closer to the area where most of the candy was sold. And then he moved to Indiana for a bit to live with his grandmother after his grandpa died. And this was a little weird, but it was actually, like, nothing weird happened. He would hang out with these two little girls who were sisters, and he would, like, make movies of them. But it was just legit, innocent, like just comedic. Playing
with
them. Yeah, like, they were, like, comedy movies or whatever.
Like, neighborhood girls or just...
Yeah, he just always hung around young kids. Like, rarely ever did he hang out with someone his own age. So he was just, like, those were his friends, were these just, like, two little girls.
I wonder if it is have anything to do with... Is there anything about his intellect? Did he just, like, relate more to, or maturity level? Did he just relate more to kids, I wonder? Like,
maybe. He was just shy and antisocial, and he just...
Maybe it's just easier for him to talk to kids than it was to talk to people his own age.
Yeah, yeah. So he moved back to Houston to help with the family's candy business, and he moved into an apartment that was just right above the shop. But then in 1963, Dean's mother divorced Jake West and started her own candy business, the Coral Candy Company. And Dean was made the vice president of the company. Hmm. So during the first year of business, one of the employees, who was a teenage boy, complained to Dean's mother, Mary, saying that Dean had made sexual advances towards him. And she did not like that. So instead of looking into it, she just fired the kid.
Wait, so he made sexual advances?
That Dean Coral made sexual advances towards this teenage boy that worked at the candy company. Okay. And when the boy told Dean's mom, she just fired him.
Okay.
So, you know, awesome. Mm-hmm. So Dean gets drafted into the army, and he was a radio repairman. And although he had a really great military record, he absolutely hated the army. And he applied to be discharged, stating that his help was needed with the family business. He was given an honorable discharge after only 10 months.
But it was honorable.
Yeah, it was honorable. Okay. Yeah, that he had to, you know, help out with the family business. Mm-hmm. Now, it's said that during just this short amount of time in the army is where he discovered that he was gay. And this is where he had his first gay experiences. And then acquaintances, I want to say, because I don't think he really had any friends, but just, like, people that knew him would say that they saw, like, changes in his mannerisms, and especially when he was around teenage boys. Like, he would just kind of, like, get giddy around boys.
That was his type, huh?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So since he was back from the army, he was, again, working day and night for the candy business. And then in 1965, they relocated the business directly across from an elementary school. I know.
So he's in his 20s at this point? 25-ish, 26? Okay.
Yeah. So Dean was just really well known for giving out free candy to kids.
Oh, no.
And particularly teenage boys. Mm-hmm. And that's where he earned his nickname as the Candy Man and the Pied Piper. He installed a pool table in the back of the candy shop, and it kind of became this place where the employees, who were mostly teenage boys, and local kids would just, like, come and hang out and eat candy and play pool and just, yeah, hang out. Mm-hmm. So after a couple years of this, Dean, who was about 27, became friends with David Brooks, who was 12. Oh, jeez. And David was always hanging out at the candy factory with Dean. He would regularly go with Dean to trips to the beach. He just, like, really looked up to him. Mm-hmm. He said that Dean was the first person who didn't make fun of his appearance. And he would give him money if he needed it. Like, he said he was a father figure to him. Mm-hmm. So a couple years later, though, Dean would start to pay David in cash or in gifts to allow him to perform fellatio on him.
Yeah, figured that was coming up.
Yeah, so, yeah, it gets bad. It gets worse. When he was 15, David dropped out of high school, and he moved away with his mother since his parents got divorced. And then whenever he would come back to visit his father in Houston, he would see Dean. And sometimes he would stay at his apartment. And by that time, David dropped out of high school. Dean's mother and his sister Joyce moved to Colorado after, like, another failed marriage. I think his mom had, like, 4 or 5 failed marriages. Mm-hmm. And then she closed the Coral Candy Company. So they did speak on the phone, Dean and his mother. And I think he had plans to eventually move out there to be with her. Mm-hmm. But they never saw each other again.
Wow. Okay.
So, like I mentioned before, between 1970 and 1973, Dean Kroll killed a minimum of 28 victims ages 13 to 20, although most of them were in their mid-teens, like 15, 16, 17. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of victims, especially in just like 3 years. I think the reason he was able to get away with so many is because most of the victims were taken from a place called Houston Heights, and that was a really low-income neighborhood. Mm. And many times, crimes in those types of areas are just sadly overlooked. And then another reason is because he later had 2 accomplices that would help him in luring his victims. So the first known victim was an 18-year-old college freshman named Jeffrey Conan. Jeffrey disappeared on September 25th, 1970, while hitchhiking back home from college. He was dropped off alone on the corner of Westheimer Road and South Voss Road. And at the time of his disappearance, Coral lived near the intersection off Westheimer Road. Fast forward to August 10th, 1973, and police were led to his body buried at High Island Beach, where it was concluded that he died of asphyxiation caused by manual strangulation and a cloth gag that had been placed in his mouth. His body was buried beneath a large boulder covered with a layer of lime, wrapped in plastic, naked, and bound hand and foot with nylon cord, suggesting that he had been violated. To me, that does not seem like a first crime.
No. That's not just like, hey, it's not a crime of passion where it wasn't planned.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah, that was something he thought about.
So who knows how many actual victims there were.
And he never ended up fessing up to what he wasn't actually.
Oh, we'll find out.
Oh, okay.
So remember the boy, David Brooks, that he was hanging out with right around when Conan was murdered? David interrupted Coral in the middle of him sexually assaulting 2 teenage boys that he had strapped to a 4-poster bed. He told David that he was involved in a child sex ring and was paid to film the boys. So, you know, I'm just doing this.
Just a job.
Yeah. In return for his silence, Coral promised David a car that he later bought him, a green Chevy Corvette. And then later on, he told David, no, I just killed those boys. So he said he just killed them, and then he offered to pay him $200 for every kid that he could lure to his apartment. I'll give you $200. You know, bring a boy to me.
So is David going along with this because he looks up to Dean like a father, pretty much, right? And yeah. He just will pretty much do whatever he says.
Yeah.
Or is it a romantic thing at all, too, at this point? Or
I don't know if it's really romantic. Like, I know he was getting paid to get his dick sucked.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just think, and so obviously he's abusing him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what it's like to have that mentality when you're so young and he just looked up to him. I think he just would have done whatever he said.
For sure. Yeah.
So David Brooks took the deal and he would begin to lure more and more boys to their death. Many of the victims would just be like friends or acquaintances of David's. So Coral would offer a place to party and would have like booze and drugs and then like a small town 15, 16 year old, like, hell yeah.
Especially back then, probably very easy to get people to lure people to your house.
Well, and if it's a town that's so small and boring.
Nothing to do. Yeah.
Like, so obviously they would, you know, go along with it. Mm-hmm. So that's how he would get them to get to his house. On December 13th, 1970, he lured two 14-year-old boys, James Glass and Danny Yates, away from a religious rally. And both were tied to opposite sides of Coral's torture board, which was a thing. Mm-hmm. They were raped, strangled, and buried in a boat shed that he rented. And I have a picture that I'll show you.
Okay.
Of the boat shed.
I was wondering what the picture was going to be.
They were later.
Okay. They were like searching through it.
Digging up bodies.
Oh, man. Okay.
Most of his victims would be buried in this boat shed.
That was his spot. Huh? Yeah. Okay.
So an electrical cord with alligator clips attached to each end was buried alongside Yates' body.
Alligator clips are?
Those big
they're like the metal, yes. With the teeth. Okay, duh. Okay, I see them in my head now, but it
is. Don't feel bad. I had to look it up. I was like, the fuck are alligators?
Right? Didn't know they were called that. Okay.
So on January 30th, 1971, David and Coral came across teenage brothers, Donald and Jerry Waldrop. Both boys were raped, tortured, strangled, and buried in the boat shed. I'm not going to go over what the torture was, but it was really fucked up. I'll just say a couple things. Like, at one point, one of his victims, he bit off their dick.
Whoa.
Yeah. And had, like, these, like little glass tubes that he would stick in various areas of these little boys. So, jeez. And the torture would sometimes go on for like 3 days. So it's not like they were just raped and he tortured them a little and then he killed them. No, this was like a long, not always, but many times was like a long drawn out process.
Yeah.
So it's really terrible. So between March and May of 1971, there were three more victims that were abducted, killed, and buried in the boat shed. And during these murders is when David would start to become a participant. 15-year-old Randall Harvey was abducted and shot in the head. 13-year-old David Hilligeist and 16-year-old Gregory Malliwinkle were abducted and killed together. On August 17th, 1971, David ran into an acquaintance. Because I don't think this kid had any actual friends.
Yeah.
17-year-old Reuben Watson Haney and persuaded him to go to a party, where then he was strangled and buried in the boat shed. In September 1971, Coral moved into another apartment, and he moves, like, several times. Like, I think that's another reason why he didn't get caught, is because he just moved over and over. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he moved to another apartment where David had assisted him in the abduction and murder of two more boys, but their identity is unknown. They just know from, like, the confession that, you know, they killed two boys, but they have no idea.
They couldn't put it together with, like, missing boys in the area or anything like that.
No, and the reason for that is the police fucking sucked. Mm. They were completely understaffed, and they did not, besides the fact that if they were missing, especially from that low income area. They didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
They would just basically report that someone was missing and then be like, we'll let you know if we hear from them.
If they happen to show up here, we'll bring them home.
Pretty much. Yeah. Like, it was that bad. And a lot of times, too, in, like, the 60s and 70s, most police in general, anytime there was, like, a missing teenager, they thought they were just a runaway. Or that they, you know, they went to California. Or, I don't know. Just
yeah. Something. That was the thing in the 70s, I suppose.
So, I mean, it was just perfect for him.
Yeah.
You know, he was mm-hmm. picking in the right place. Nobody really, the police didn't give a shit. People mm-hmm. just thought they
It's like left. He knew where to get his victims from.
Yeah. For like sure. He had been planning this, and I think that's probably why he didn't move with his mother, that they had like a weird relationship. That's probably
you think
why
he'd been planning this.
Oh,
for
yeah. He was grooming these time. Boys for years since the candy company, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. He had been like plotting this, had this like perfect little plan. And I think that's why he didn't move to Colorado. Cause he was like, I can't go now.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. He already had his, victims, probably a lot of his victims picked out, and or at least the areas picked out.
He had the areas picked out because mm-hmm. then he paid David to bring him victims. Mm-hmm. So because of all of the police not giving a shit and everything, mm-hmm. a lot of parents actually believed that their kids had just run away, and others were just understandably freaking out. And they were like, the cops aren't doing shit. I need to do something. So they were having like posters distributed, offering money for information, going out mm-hmm. with search parties, you know, trying to find their fucking kids. Mm-hmm. And one of the volunteers to distribute the posters was a 15-year-old named Elmer Wayne Henley, and he was a lifelong friend of one of the victims, David Hillegeist. So Brooks had found Wayne Henley, and he lured him to Coral's place as an intended victim. But Coral saw him and had other plans. He thought Wayne would make a good accomplice, and he offered him the same fee of $200 for any boy that he could lure to his place. So, and the price would end up ranging anywhere between like $200 to $1,500.
That's a lot for back then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and
for the area on top of it, of just being probably like a, you know, or being the poor area or whatever.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And, but mostly I saw $200, but still that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Jeez.
He didn't tell him that he was torturing, raping, and killing all these kids, but pretty much the same thing he told David, that he was involved in a white slave ring that was operating out of Dallas. But, like, that's much better.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess I'd rather be a slave than tortured for 3 days and, you know, murdered.
Well, yeah, but if I'm just saying, you walk in and you see someone strapped to a bed and they tell you, oh, it's just for a slave ring. Oh, okay, cool. Like,
it's still a weird thing to be
that, like, that's okay, that's like, your go-to cover-up.
Yeah, like, right, that's the lie.
Yeah,
so
that's the lie. That's why I was just like, what the fuck,
god.
So Wayne ignored the offer, so I was like, cool. He ignored it for several months, but when his family was completely broke and they really needed the money, he finally accepted the offer. The first abduction he claims to have participated in was after Coral moved again in February of 72. However, David Brooks claims that it was before that. So Wayne claims that he and Coral picked up a boy, lured him to the house, saying that they were going to smoke weed and hang out. But Wayne tricked him into handcuffs. So, like, basically he would put himself in handcuffs, but he had like the key in his pocket. So he'd put handcuffs on and then be like, oh, look, I can get out of them. And he's like, you give it a try. And then
that's
how he tricked him into
sneaky,
the handcuffs.
Sneaky, sneaky, sneaky.
Yeah. So when he did trick him into the handcuffs, Wayne watched Coral bind and gag him. And then he left him alone, thinking that he was just going to be sold into a sex slave ring. The identity of this kid is still unknown.
Wow.
A lot more of these murders are just them being lured to hang out to smoke or drink, and they attack them. March 24th, 1972, they came across a friend of Wayne's, an 18-year-old named Frank Aguirre. And after his murder, Wayne helped Coral and David bury him at Highland Beach. So when he was being interviewed about all of this, Wayne kept claiming that he had no idea that he was murdering the boys. And he just kept saying, I didn't know he was killing them. He even said that he tried to convince Coral not to kill Frank Aguirre. But none of that even matters because he became an active participant in the abductions and the killings. So April 20th, 1972, he helped abduct a 17-year-old Mark Scott, who was really well known to both Wayne and David. So Mark, though, fought back. He even attempted to stab them with a knife. But according to David, when Wayne pointed a gun at him, he just gave up. So he, along with so many others, had been tied to the torture board, raped, tortured, strangled, and buried at High Island Beach. David claims that Wayne was especially sadistic during the abduction and killing of two kids, Billy Bulch and Johnny DeLome. After the torture and rape of both boys, Wayne manually strangled Billy and then shouted, "Hey, Johnny," and shot him in the forehead with the bullet exiting his ear. And Johnny did not die. He just pleaded with him, "Wayne, please don't," before he was then strangled. And both were buried at High Island Beach. Yeah. 19-year-old Billy Ridinger was abused and tortured by Coral, but after David pleaded with him to let him go, he was allowed to leave. So soon after...
I wonder what he said to make that happen.
Yeah. So soon after he lets him go, Wayne knocks David unconscious. Coral then tied him to his bed and assaulted him repeatedly before releasing him. But even though he assaulted him, he still continued to help him out. Like, okay, I let him go, but, you know, this is your punishment for it or something. I don't know. It's fucked up.
Wow.
During that summer, there were two more victims, 17-year-old Stephen Sickman, 19-year-old Roy Bunton, who both ended up being buried at the boat shed. Other victims from October and November of that year were Wally J. Simino, Richard Hembry, Willard Branch, and Richard Kettner. January 20th, 1973, Coral moved again, and within 2 weeks of living there, he killed 17-year-old Joseph Lyles, who knew both Coral and David. March of 1973, he moved to an address that his father had vacated in Pasadena, 2020 Lamar Drive. Okay, so now we're going to talk about this 2020 Lamar Drive.
Okay.
According to both David and Wayne, the level of brutality of the murders that happened at this address increased. And I think this is where a lot more of, like, the sick torture shit happened. June 4th, 1973, 15-year-old William Ray Lawrence was abused and tortured for 3 days, strangled, and buried at Lake Sam Rayburn. Less than 2 weeks after that, 20-year-old Raymond Stanley Blackburn was abducted, strangled, and buried at Lake Sam Rayburn. July 6th, 1973, 15-year-old Homer Lewis Garcia was murdered and buried at Lake Sam Rayburn. July 12th, 1973, 17-year-old John Sellers murdered and buried at High Island Beach. So then in July of 73, David married his pregnant fiance.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. So this whole time he had a special someone.
Yeah. How he found time between luring, torturing, and killing boys, he found a way to have a girlfriend,
wait.
Get married, and have a baby.
And we're not really supposed to think she had no clue that something weird was going on? Or does it say?
Like, no, I didn't. I
guess that some women stay willfully ignorant, especially back then when you just don't want to cause friction in your relationship.
Yeah.
But that's wild if she truly didn't know anything or.
Well,
I don't
know. It might be a little easier to believe because it's not like he was.
Yeah.
Raping and torturing the boys.
He wasn't doing the bulk of
torturous
crazy shit.
He was just basically, you know, hanging out with his friends. I don't know. I don't know how much she knew or didn't know.
Yeah.
So after he gets married, Wayne becomes the sole procurer of the victims. I don't know if David was just, like, done and, like, let's get the fuck out, or...
It's not much about him after he just stopped.
Or he, I don't know if he was just, like...
this is enough. Like,
or if he was just like, I'm just gonna take a break, guys.
Yeah,
I'm getting married and have a baby. So I don't know if he was like done. But I would kind of think that if you had settled down enough to have a wife and a kid, that you'd be like, all right, I'm gonna get the fuck out of here.
It makes you think. Yeah, think about your decisions for sure.
Also, would you, especially if it was a little boy, would you want him hanging around Coral?
Yeah, no. It's scary enough thinking about this guy having and raising his own child.
Yeah, as exactly. It is. But. So there were 3 abductions/killings. 15-year-old Michael Balch, who was the brother of one of the previous victims, Billy Balch. He was killed and buried at Lake Sam Rayburn. Mm-hmm. Charles Cobble and Marty Ray Jones were abducted together and both buried in the boat shed. August 3rd, 1973 is when Coral killed his last victim, 13-year-old James Stratton Dramala. He was riding his bike, collecting empty glass bottles to resell, and he was raped, tortured, and strangled with a cord before being buried at the boat shed. Mm. Poor baby.
Aww.
All right, August 8th, 1973. So by now, Wayne was 17. And he invited his 19-year-old friend, Timothy Curley, to come to a party at Coral's. He was supposed to be, you know, the next victim. Mm-hmm. So they went to Coral's, they huffed paint, and
wow.
drank until midnight, and they went to go get some sandwiches. Mm-hmm. When they parked the car, they heard Wayne's friend, 15-year-old Rhonda Williams, and she was supposedly being beaten by her drunken father, and they asked her to come to Coral's house. She said yes. Like, she just wanted to get the fuck out of there.
Sure, yeah.
So about 3 a.m., August 8th, 1973, they returned to the house, and Coral was fucking pissed. Like, you do not bring a girl here. He lost his shit on Wayne. He told him that Wayne ruined everything. He was just fucking livid. But when he eventually calmed down, he gave the 3 of them, you know, beer and weed, and the boys were just still huffing paint. And then after a couple hours of that, they all passed out.
And the girl's still there, too. He got over it, and they all were hanging out. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, and they all passed out. Wayne woke up, and he was on his stomach while Coral was putting him in handcuffs. His mouth was taped shut, and his ankles were bound. The other 2 were bound by nylon rope and gagged. Curly was stripped naked. Coral told Wayne, man, you blew it bringing that girl. And then he started shouting, I'm going to kill you all, but first I'm going to have my fun. And he kicked Rhonda repeatedly in the chest and then brought a gun to Wayne's stomach and threatened to shoot him. But Wayne kind of freaked out and was like, oh, no. Like, I'll help you torture and kill them both. Like, just, you know, don't fucking, I'm sorry.
Right.
So Coral let him go, and he tied the 2, Curly and Rhonda, to his torture board. He gave Wayne a hunting knife, and he told him that he was going to rape and kill Curly, and that Wayne was to do the same thing to Rhonda. So obviously he wasn't going to go for the girl.
Right. That's disgusting.
So both Curly and Rhonda woke up to being assaulted, and Wayne had
removed... Oh, they were still asleep, or they were still passed out.
Yeah,
okay. It was just Wayne was like, okay.
Yeah, Wayne woke up. So...
Even as he's kicking her in the chest repeatedly, she didn't wake up.
No. Nah.
Wow.
Okay. I don't know. So they both woke up to the assault, and Wayne had removed Rhonda's gag, and she supposedly asked him, like, is this for real? And he said yes, and she was like, are you going to do anything about it? So Wayne grabbed Coral's pistol and yelled, you've gone far enough, Dean. I can't go on any longer. I can't have you kill all my friends. So Coral then said, kill me, Wayne. You won't do it. And then he shot Coral in the forehead, but it didn't fully penetrate his skull. So he kept coming at him.
He didn't even go down?
Yeah. No, it didn't penetrate his skull. Oh. So imagine you shoot someone in the fucking head and they just
I
don't think it bounced off, but it didn't fully penetrate.
Oh, just stuck in it. Gotcha.
Yeah, okay. And he just like kept coming at him. Either way. So he fired 2 more rounds, hitting him in the left shoulder. Coral then ran the fuck out of the room, and Wayne fired 3 more rounds, hitting him in his lower back and shoulder. Coral died where he fell, his naked body lying face toward a wall. After he shot Coral, he released Curly and Rhonda, and they called the police. And Wayne just kind of blurted out to him, y'all better come here right now. I just killed a man. Putting on my really shitty Texas accent. Yeah,
like, redneck, like, visual going on right now.
Oh, yeah. Here, I'll show you. Oh, we got a pic. I have pictures. So this is, first of all, this is David Brooks, the one where he's like, he looks kind of funny.
The little long-haired dude.
Yeah. Okay. That is Wayne.
Okay.
Elmer Wayne Henley.
Elmer Wayne. Okay.
Yeah. And that's, this is Dean. He just looks like a fucking sicko. Mm. Yeah.
Like he's going, mm.
Coupons on candy. Not funny. No. So they waited for police to arrive, and Curly told detectives that Wayne told him, if you weren't my friend, I could have gotten $200 for you. So when police arrested Wayne, he told them everything. I'm glad he did, but you just killed this guy in self-defense. Your friends had no idea you were a part of this. If anything, they were just kind of like, thought you were being tortured too.
He didn't even have to say that he was part of it.
He could have gotten completely away with it and just said that he killed this fucking monster. But no, he couldn't do that. He told him fucking everything. He told him how he got brought in, how he participated, all about David Brooks, about where the bodies were buried, everything. Which, again, I'm glad he did.
Yeah.
But whatever. Both Wayne and David were sentenced to life in prison. Wayne is still serving his life sentence, and he will talk to anyone about it. And David served his prior to his death on May 28th, 2020, which was ruled COVID-19 related.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And that is the terrifying and depressing, sadistic fucking story of Dean Coral, a.k.a. the Candyman.
Wow. It kind of sucks that he really didn't have to face punishment for his crime. I mean, he was killed, but which is good. But you kind of want someone to really pay for that kind of thing and have to like live out the rest of their life.
Absolutely. And then we don't even know how many more victims though.
We don't even know if this is Wayne's version of everything. So who knows how he even like.
Well, David,
or he corroborated
a lot of it, but he didn't really. He didn't want to talk to anyone.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
But then I do have, so I showed you the boat shed. Mm-hmm. I showed you Wayne and David and Coral. Here's another picture of them when they were helping the police search for bodies. And then this is a picture I found of things that, what they found at Dean's. And one of them, that's the torture board.
Does it say anything about, like, the wife and kid that,
David's wife and kid? Mm-hmm. No, I didn't see anything about that. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention, after all this, come to find out, Coral had a girlfriend for, like, I think it was, like, 5 years, and she had a kid. And she actually, like, denied it. For a long time.
Like, wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Just didn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He was also super gay. She said that they almost had sex once, but then they, like, stopped in the middle of it.
Wow.
Because he just, like, didn't feel like it or something.
Yeah, she wasn't his type.
I don't know. It was, honestly, she was probably, like, the perfect beard. But
yeah.
And he moved so many times, so, like, his place didn't, it's not like his place was crawling with all this evidence from all the boys that he, you know, tortured and killed.
Yeah.
It was just, I don't know, I thought that was interesting.
It is. I find it interesting that two of those three guys have these, like, serious relationships going on during
this whole
thing. I don't
think that David was gay, though.
But, yeah, but I guess in the sense that, like, to have a serious relationship and have someone, like, not even, like, truly know the kind of person that you are. Or what you're capable of. Unless you're okay with that. Like, I guess it just leaves a lot of questions to be answered about who these women were, but.
Yeah, but a lot of times, though, they were really good at, like, covering it up. Mm-hmm. Like, Ted Bundy had a girlfriend. Yeah, BTK had a wife and kids. Like, oh, it's because they're...
It's the double life thing.
Yeah, exactly. They're, like, a totally different person.
Yeah.
So you can't really, like... I don't really fault the women.
No, I didn't mean it like that either. I just meant, like, I'm almost, like, wow, how could you not, like, know?
Yeah. They just have to be that good at covering it up. Well, and I think maybe she was just so... Maybe Coral's girlfriend was just so busy pretending he wasn't gay to notice any of the other shit.
Well, and I guess it also depends on, you know, the type of woman you have. Let's say you're Jodi Arias that's never going to let you out of her sight. Well, you're not going to get away with shit behind her back, you know?
That's true.
So, you know, I guess it just depends. It just depends on the person.
Always keep tabs on your man.
Yeah.
Check for serial killer.
Yes.
So I'm actually really interested to talk about his chart.
Yeah. Okay. So before I get into the, breaking down kind of like the signs, so I wanted to kind of start with the main elements in his chart. So we all know we have earth, air, fire, and water signs.
Yeah.
And it basically describes our temperament. And so just like really broadly, fire signs, very passionate, earth signs, down to earth, air people kind of live in their own heads. And then water people, we know, are very emotional. So a well-balanced chart, which, you know, most normal people have, you're going to have all the elements in there. So maybe like 3 to 4 of each. Once you start getting out of balance, let's say 5 to 6 in one and 1 to 2 of the other, is when that becomes an extreme focus on this certain type of temperament.
Okay. So like if you have a lot of fire in your chart, you're probably going to be a more kind of passionate, angry person?
Yeah. Well, okay. So he actually has both fire and earth were pretty equally dominant. At 5.5, which, you know, 5 to 6 is, 6 is extreme. So he's almost extreme in both fire and earth qualities.
Wow.
So the fire part of it that means very like intense, impulsive, spontaneous, dominating.
Oh.
And, inclined to invest all of themselves into their activities. Difficulty perceiving other people as separate individuals with their own valid needs and desires. So a little disconnected.
Yeah.
With the earth part of it, you have very methodical, really like concerned with concrete details and, operate a lot with like your senses. So you're very like attuned to your environment, to your physical body, and to the sensory comforts and pleasures.
It's so gross when you're talking about decoral.
I know.
But yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
God. So I want to talk about his weakest element, which is water.
So emotional. So
lack of water, just unresponsive, insecure, very closed off, impersonal, out of touch. Yeah.
Although super shy and antisocial.
Yeah. So,
but then you said like dominating, right?
Yeah. The fire part, very dominating.
He had to like dominate his victims.
And then, another aspect of having a lack of water in your chart is, becoming addicted to excitement and intensity and, just very disconnected emotionally.
Yeah.
Struggle with any kind of empathy and, you know, other people's feelings.
There was no empathy with that man.
It's completely like turned off.
To be able to murder or torture anyone, there's no empathy. But like little kids, like 13-year-old kids. Yeah. I don't know. It's really fucked up.
Yeah. No, it's very, it is horrible. Yeah, with a lack of water, it also kind of suggests that the only way they can even come across as sensitive or having any kind of emotion is pretty much based off of acting how they think that you're supposed to act when you have these feelings.
and but not ever truly feeling them, which is yikes.
Yeah, and just like pretending.
Mm-hmm.
Like, isn't this is what's supposed to happen, right?
Yeah. So I'm supposed to act, right? So he also had a couple of retrograde planets when he was born, which that is very common. All of us, most people, it's very rare to not have any planets that were retrograde when you were born.
Didn't you say I had five?
You have five. That is one of the rarer ones. Most people have two or three. I have three.
I'm an overachiever. What can I say?
Yeah, so he had three as well. Which again, like, you know, that's pretty normal, but the, you know, some of the qualities of the specific, retrograde, the planets that were in retrograde that he had. So,
and what does retrograde planets mean?
It depends on the planet. So okay. Each planet kind of carries its own qualities that, you know, that determine,
yeah,
I guess. Let's see. So he had a Saturn retrograde. Let's see. Resistance, personal change, self-doubting, self-critical, feels inferior. Mm. I think he definitely felt that. Inclined to negativity or depression.
Yeah, we don't really know a lot about his mental state. There's just so much of the awful fucking shit he did, but...
Difficulty coping with authority, possibly weak father figure.
See, I don't know about that one.
And actually, I'll get to that too, because other placements in his chart do point to... the father being a more important, like, role in his life.
So that's the thing. So I don't think his father was weak, because they talked about how he was, like, super strict with them. But then they divorced, and then you don't really hear much about the dad. Just
like did he stay in his life or...
Nothing that I read. It was just really about, like, his mom and all her failed marriages and how he just kind of, like, followed her around everywhere and was just kind of... obsessed with her. Mm-hmm. And that's what I meant by, you know, I think he had plans to move to Colorado because he moved so much. It was probably in his, like, next steps or whatever. Mm-hmm. But
well, he also had Uranus was also retrograde, which suggests alienation from society.
No, like being super antisocial.
Yes, okay. Antisocial, nervous tension, high level of internal excitement. Along with the nervous tension, that's like almost, it's I don't know, it's kind of weird. Okay, the Pluto retrograde. Suppressed desire and anger, explosive tendencies. Alienated, antisocial, misfit tendencies.
Oof.
Self-destructive. Jesus. Withdrawn, private, reclusive.
Okay.
So those are his retrograde planets, which I think, you know, a lot of that.
Seems like that Pluto retrograde.
Yeah, that really.
Played a big role.
All right, so now we'll go to his signs. So he is a Capricorn sun, Gemini moon, and his rising is Leo.
Jodi Arias was a Gemini moon.
Yes, she was. I was like, this is oddly familiar when I'm looking at the moon stuff. Although her moon was in the first house, which just, you know, that was the crazy part of hers, which he doesn't. Moon is his 10th house, which we'll get into that too. So actually in the start of his story... I did really get Capricorn vibes. They're very, like, hardworking.
Yeah.
And
working day and night for the candy company.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how happy he was about that, but it sounds like he got it done. And, you know, they're pretty highly motivated in general.
Yeah.
And, they kind of, like, they go all in. But they can also tend to be, like, kind of lonely people, even though they don't necessarily show it. Like, all the time.
Yeah.
But they can definitely be reserved and very standoffish.
Yeah.
So one of the Capricorn traits that I didn't really hear much about, I'm not sure if he really made people laugh so much. The big Capricorn
people
quality.
Laughed at him.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, maybe they thought it was funny when he was walking around with them fucking squirrels around his neck.
Or maybe he was being sarcastic, because Capricorns are highly sarcastic. I know that because I am one. But yeah, just very good at poker faces. You don't ever really know, like, what they're thinking.
Well.
But, you know, also loyal people. Okay, so the sun is in his fifth house, which is the house of, like, creativity, romance, dating, children. Oh. So... Energetic, creative, fond of pleasure and good living. Says you may have many love affairs and takes joy in children.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Seriously?
Yes.
Oh, does it say, because I totally didn't even mention this. Does it say anything about like musical interests or musical talent?
Yeah, I actually kind of skipped over that part, but this is also in his fifth house, interested in art, theater, sports, and yeah, likes to be with people.
So I forgot to mention this, but when he was in high school, besides being antisocial, maybe dating a couple girls, but mm-hmm. mostly just keeping to himself and working at the candy company, mm-hmm. he loved the trombone and played that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. It's very artsy of him.
Yeah, I just thought that was funny. I've seen that in charts before, that, you know, musical talent or whatever, mm-hmm. but totally yeah, forgot I didn't, to mention I that
didn't
in the story.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything about that, so I kind of just shuffled on past that. But yeah, that's interesting. So it does point to the father kind of teaching him in life, specifically kind of like how to not take any shortcuts to get what you want and how to work hard.
Maybe he learned that from his stepfather, that Jake West guy.
Did they have a good relationship?
I don't know. But it's just that he worked, you know, day and night for this candy company that mm-hmm. his mom and stepdad started.
Okay. Okay. So those are the main things I see in as far as like the sun and, you know, for sun sign and the fifth house. Moving on to his moon, which I know I didn't go through that in the beginning, but, you know, obviously the sun is kind of like the center of our personality and who we're destined to be. The moon is our emotional response to things, and our rising is just how we are perceived in the world by people. So
yes.
Since I forgot to say that. So for the Gemini moon, which I think, yeah, Jody was also. Mm-hmm. It's fairly emotional. It's a fairly emotional placement. But it does specify that lunar Geminis are generally more adept at handling the intellectual needs of children.
Jeez Christ.
I know. Geminis often take on a role of organizing get-togethers.
Shut the fuck up. It does not say that.
Right there.
Oh my God. Like, but in the complete wrong way.
In the very wrong way. Yeah, they're impressionable and their imagination is boundless.
Don't like it.
Creepier and creepier. Yeah. Their openness to new ideas is admirable, apparently. But when irritable, they can become snappy. They have a very complicated moodiness going on. The same kind of moodiness that you would actually find in most water signs. But, you know, the Gemini moons have it.
Jeez.
And usually, let's see, their difficult behavior stems from an inner restlessness. So
maybe the fact that he was hiding that he was gay because it was still not cool to be gay in the early 70s, sure late 60s.
Mm-hmm. Something to do with it for sure. So feeling misunderstood is also very common for lunar Geminis.
Yeah.
And the only real solution for that is for them to get in touch with their own feelings, which they generally are not really.
Yeah, and didn't you say he had, like, no water in his chart?
Yeah, he has such little water. In fact, I will get to where that water sign is because it's interesting. So, the moon is in his 10th house, which is, like, your career and status, long-term goals. How you make your mark in the world.
I swear to God, if it says anything with children or candy, I'm going to lose my fucking mind.
Actually, it says that very strongly influenced by the father. Again, the father is the only family member that is ever specifically called out in his chart. And there's one more place, I can't remember where it is, but we'll get there, where the father is called out again. So it's all father.
Seems like he Well, he could have possibly had some daddy issues. His dad left. His parents got divorced and back together. And then his dad left. And then his mom had all these failed marriages. So he had all these kind of stepfathers, you know, in and out.
Yeah.
So maybe he had some daddy issues.
I'm sure he did. Suggests that he's frightened of getting old, which I guess he didn't have to worry about that. So we'll never really know if that was a fear.
Like, I don't know. Maybe that's why he liked hanging out with kids.
Maybe.
Well, I know why he liked hanging out with kids.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe there was an aspect to that of just not wanting to.
Like, you make me feel young. Now get on my bed.
So it points to a real emotional need for recognition, for acknowledgement. I don't know if he really had that or if what he was doing gave him that sense of achievement. I don't know.
Maybe, but it didn't seem like he wanted any attention.
Yeah. It says he may worry about living up to the expectations of his family, which maybe would have been why he, you know, worked day and night for them, not wanting to disappoint.
Yeah.
Decisions definitely emotionally based.
Okay.
And, act on emotional whims far too often.
Like, just feel like killing someone today, boys. Go grab me someone.
So it's unlikely that with Moon in the 10th house that you find true happiness, if you follow like the expectations of others and, you know, again, it kind of goes back to really reaching in, I guess, and like getting to know yourself.
Yeah.
But a big conflict between the head and the heart. So emotions tell you one thing and your head is telling you another. Hmm. So I'm sure that he had that, but we know what he listened to. I don't think it was his head. No. The result can be like very irrational and irrational one moment and then like logical the next.
Yeah.
And it could just be like a seesaw. You just never know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Again, it talks about a sense of humor and especially satire, just like this Capricorn sun sign. But I mean, that's a really bad form of satire.
I don't know.
Yeah.
He could have been, I don't know. Maybe just people laughed at him.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, just a lot of swinging going on between irrational and rational thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
Just both, just like a whirlwind, and it's a big struggle. But it does indicate that he would be really interesting and funny again, and that you have a tendency to misrepresent yourself with what you say from time to time, but you're a charming, if not a little kooky friend.
I'd say he's definitely a lot kooky.
Oh. He is happiest in his own little imaginary world.
Yeah, the fuck he is.
Yes.
Disgusting.
And this is one of the reasons why with this placement, they cannot be happy anywhere because he can never find this ideal world outside that he's created within.
Jesus.
So this can create a lot of like just instability and just aiming to enjoy the moment.
Well, I'd say he enjoyed the moment, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. All right. So Mercury, which is the planet of communication.
Yes.
His Mercury is in Sagittarius.
That's fire sign, right?
Yes, it is. So just strong opinions and very eager to share them. Mm. Extremely imaginative person who dreams up all sorts of unusual ideas and plans.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuck out with that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, but it's, it also says that he holds back a lot on sensuality.
Maybe in a real life.
Yeah, in a real, like, adult way, in a healthy way.
Yeah.
100%.
So gross. It's just, it's funny. It's not funny, but it's interesting how if you're just reading a chart for like a friend or for yourself and you see these things, you're like, oh, okay. But when you're talking about a killer or a serial killer or someone that like, you know, tortured and killed a bunch of kids, like,
yeah,
It just takes it to that. It's a whole other level.
One statement would mean something if it was like for your friend's chart, you'd be like, oh my God, because you do this, you know, yeah. And how it can mean something so creepy for another.
Yeah, it can totally change from something mm-hmm. like good to something terrifying.
Yes, 100%. His Venus is in Capricorn. So Venus, you know, represents, you know, your emotions, values, love.
Your relationships.
Your relationships, yes. So Capricorn being a very...
Capricorns are very kind of like business-minded. They can be like kind of cold, right?
Yeah, well, so they... Let's say like Venus and Capricorn trying to win your heart, but they would do it in a much more self-controlled way. There's not going to be any flamboyancy or, you know, big romantic gestures.
Oh, okay.
But you do want to portray stability because, of course, I mean, you know that your partner probably wants stability, a future. So that's something that a Venus in Capricorn person, you know, would normally,
that is how they would think.
Yes, look at what I can offer you.
Please marry me. I have a home and gold.
So they project this aura of competency and their loner-like behavior can be attractive in a cool way.
I don't think that's what his girlfriend thought.
Yeah, because they don't go gaga over love, don't even express it a whole lot. Oh, triggered. So lovers may complain that Venus and Capricorns are just a little too practical and deliberate.
Hmm.
And maybe sometimes can come across as lacking in warmth and not very spontaneous.
I would definitely say he was lacking in warmth. Like, yes. He is just, his picture, he looks like a cold fish.
He
like
does.
Cold dead fish.
Yes, he does.
God, I hate him.
So they are also a little shy in matters of the heart. And even though they don't want you to know it. But, you know, if you like knowing where your relationship is headed, you'd be pleased with a Venus in Capricorn because they like to plan ahead. In love.
That would suck.
Hey, it's not so bad. No, just kidding. It sucks.
Which in 3 years' time, we shall be married. Like, I don't know why I'm
which
using
I would,
this like,
yeah,
exactly. accent, but to me it's just like...
Because right. all of a sudden we're back in the 1920s? I don't know.
Come here, Shay. You're going to be my wife, Shay.
Okay, so Venus is in his sixth house, which that is the house of daily routines, health, fitness, says likely to be devoted to sick or poor people.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Good relations with his social circle. Oh. Maybe it was too helpful.
Social circle in Houston Heights.
Yeah. It doesn't always know how to express emotions and is actually frightened of showing love. Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Doubts, suspicious, just worries too much, possibly jealous, but more likely insecure, which makes more sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it says that in an attempt to control the outcome of a relationship or of a loved one's feelings, he can turn to manipulative games. So.
Gross.
Yeah. And even if he does feel like he succeeded at it, there's never that feeling of winning. And it's just a vicious cycle of repeating the same thing over and over and over again.
Which he did.
Yes. It suggests that he would learn the most about himself through relationships. Basically, seeing himself like through someone else's eyes, being open to that. Even though he might not always like what he sees.
Yeah.
But that would ultimately be how he would be able to get to his inner demons and meet his darker side. Well,
he lived his darker side.
But if it would be through relationships, any chance of him basically facing whatever demons he had going on inside that was making him do this, it was probably going to, somebody else needed to be the one to gain his trust and bring that out in him, which I don't think he ever let anybody in to that extent. So
it didn't seem like it. No, I think, because even it seemed like his, you know, closest people that he was to was David and Wayne, and mm-hmm. he tortured, knocked him out and tried to torture him both.
Yeah.
Like, with David, he actually did tie him up and assault mm-hmm. him, and then with Wayne, he almost did.
That's right.
So I don't think he really ever trusted anyone.
No, I don't think he ever let anyone in.
No.
So this I thought was interesting. One of his water signs is in Mars, which Mars is the planet of like, just desire. Kind of like, yeah, passion, anger, war, just, yeah, action and physical energy. So having this gentle water sign of Pisces in Mars, it actually suggests that should be a very mid-tempered and like gentle person.
Yeah.
And it's not a very active position to have in your Mars, to have Pisces in your Mars.
I mean, he looks like a weak little bitch, so.
He does.
He probably didn't actually fight, and that's why he felt the need to torture kids. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, because they generally will not appear like they're capable of harming anything or anybody.
Well,
they come across, yeah, they come across as very unthreatening.
Yeah, he's very unthreatening looking.
But does point to a lot of indirect aggression, unless they're able to find a creative expression for their energy.
Mm. I don't ever like that when we're talking about
I know.
Very
I know.
Creative. God damn it.
So Mars and Pisces people tend to play games to get what they want. And even though a lot of times they don't even know exactly what they do want or why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
Their desires, they're changeable and moody.
Yeah.
And that's the Pisces right there. It actually says an example of a Mars in Pisces is Bono.
Really?
Too, who seems to have found the perfect outlet for his creativity through his music. So.
Well.
So, hey, Bono.
Be like Bono. Don't be like Dean Corll.
Yes, that. Let's see. So, Mars is in his 8th house, which that is the house of intimacy and sex. Mm. Sexually very powerful, also capable of tremendous focus and hard work, but sexually intense and deep. Gross.
Yeah.
So we have a Mars opposition Neptune, which is a pretty challenging position. You definitely have difficulty trusting in yourself and your ability to do anything. You have difficulty pinpointing what it is that you want, or even a part of you feels like you just don't deserve it. You just don't have the self-confidence. You fear rejection as well as criticism. And often use a roundabout means to get what you want.
Like manipulation.
Yes. So, but it also says your imagination is so powerful that it can be hard to trust your instincts. You just fantasize about good things, and your desire nature is strong, very suggestible, attracted to mysteries and intrigue. Sexual experimentation is likely, as you are forever addicted to sensuality and unusual, or perhaps even what many would consider perverse sexual scenarios.
Jesus.
Sensual appetite, like a bottomless pit, forever in a state of wanting more, tiring of regular sexual scenarios very quickly.
That's like Ed Kemper.
Yeah.
He had the same thing.
Yeah, he did. He must have also had that same like opposition then in his chart. Yeah, you're right. This is like exactly what it said.
I just think it's really interesting how as we go, we're finding a lot of similarities
in these people.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different people and so many different ways that your chart can be
interpreted.
Yeah, and the way that your chart can be, that it's just interesting to me that the more we go, the more we find that these killers kind of have similar placements.
Yes, yes. I know. I bet you, like, after a few episodes, we're going to be, like, the second we see, like, oh, shit, it's another Mars opposition Neptune.
Yeah.
We're going to know right off the bat what's coming with that.
Yeah.
Okay. And lastly, in that placement, just keeping your motives and personal agenda very hidden.
Yeah.
Which we know he did that. So.
Absolutely.
Okay, so another placement of a water sign in his chart, Pisces, is in his Black Moon Lilith, which represents our darker, deeper nature.
Yeah.
That is usually repressed, buried, and that is also Pisces, which suggests he may have felt ashamed or off for being needy or compassionate.
Or ashamed of his own sexuality.
Yeah, just feeling uncomfortable, denying human traits within himself. And that leads to extreme behaviors.
Oh, yeah. Like denying, you know, your own sexuality and just taking it out on innocent victims.
So, yeah, self-acceptance and, you know, just the integration of these traits. And moderation can be empowering, but, yeah.
Not in his case.
Not in his case at all. All right. So let's get to the rising sign. His rising sign is Leo. Now,
so the mask, like it's how other people perceive you, right?
Yes. And this is, so Leo rising people are like, boom, look at me. Like,
yeah.
Like here I am. They just radiate this energy.
They usually have really good hair.
Really great hair. My mom is, well, she's a triple Leo.
Yeah.
Great hair. Always jealous of it. but yeah, like just very, very self-aware, very confident.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? Like maybe again, like we've talked about before, the whole nurture versus nature thing. Mm-hmm. If rising is kind of how people see you, I think the way you grow up could really just affect that. I mean, who knows? If his mom hadn't been a certain way or whatever, he could have been more confident. I don't know.
And it does say too that they are given to like rash decisions and, you know, kind of temper tantrum excesses. So
also I want to say he was probably very much look at me rocking that dead squirrel necklace.
Yes.
Very, I mean, fashion forward.
You don't wear a dead squirrel necklace if you're trying to blend in.
Absolutely.
So, no. So yeah, very much desire to be in charge of everything that's going on in their circle, which can sometimes come out as very bossy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if it goes too far, which plenty of Leos do, it can just, you're just a mean person who wants to make, you know.
He's a very mean fucking person.
Mm-hmm. He wants to make sure that everyone like just knows that they're right. So actually many Leo rising people are managers.
He was vice president of the candy company.
That's true. He managed some candy in his day. So no matter their age in real world terms, Leo rising people are kids at heart.
Shut the fuck up. God damn it.
Oh,
so gross. God. I hated doing this story.
I know. Let's look at his fourth house, which is the house of like home life, family, roots, deep emotions, self-worth. He has a Scorpio in his fourth house, which indicates a big attachment to home and family, but also a very intense home environment and a strong element of privacy.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't really hear much about outside of just kind of basic things like moved here, got married there. You know, we didn't really hear too much about, you know, what his family life was maybe truly like behind closed doors.
Well, I mean, I know at least
privacy is a big thing.
Mm-hmm. With his mother and father, when they were together, it was like explosive. They were very combative. Mm-hmm. And it didn't seem like it was very consistent for him. He didn't seem to have a consistent home life. He was just super attached to his mom. His parents were together, divorced, got back together. They moved around a lot. She got married, divorced. Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
She moved. So it didn't seem like, it seemed like the only constant was his mom. And she was super protective of him and
clearly never, you know,
never like accepted or believed that he did any of those terrible things, which he absolutely did.
Oh yeah. He did it. All right. So his seventh house, which is like one-on-one relationships, like marriage, partnership, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So he is Aquarius in his seventh house. And it says the relationship between partners will be very friendly. Both love their independence and their freedom of action. So
I'd say that his girlfriend gave him the freedom to
She gave him a lot of space.
Yeah. She had to have for him to have done all of this, like killing so many kids so quickly with short times between, moving all the time, like that's why I was shocked to hear he had a girlfriend. I'm like, how did he have any time?
Yeah, I know. I would love to hear her story, her side of things. That would be an interesting story.
Yeah.
So, we also have another Pisces placement here in.
So all of his water is Pisces.
There's one more after this. That's saving it for last. All right. So Pisces in the eighth house, which is the house of intimacy, sex, all that stuff. It actually says he needs to be held more accountable with matters related to the eighth house.
Yeah. Jesus.
Which I agree with.
Yes.
Be careful around water. That's kind of weird because his little beach house, you know.
His boat shed, buried at beaches. He went to beaches all the time.
Mm-hmm. I thought that's kind of interesting.
That's a little, yeah. I mean, I don't think he's fearful of it, but that's just interesting that that's in there.
Yeah. So the last placement we have with, the water sign, we have Cancer in his 12th house. So the 12th house is like the deepest, darkest, most sensitive, secretive parts of your chart. It's where we meet our karma and where we ultimately suppress and bury things.
Yeah.
Problems seem to only come from family.
Huh.
It's one thing that it says. But when the 12th house is in the sign of Cancer, you have a tendency to kind of like idealize your parents, which I don't know if he did that.
I mean, probably his mom at least, because I just know that they were so close, so.
Yeah. It says strange matters are hiding in the 12th house when Cancer's here.
I'd say a lot of the shit he did was strange.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, kind of carries a burden of his entire family tree. It's just all about kind of this family issues.
Yeah.
I guess, one way or another.
I mean, and who knows, like, how, I mean, he did have a lot of family issues, mm-hmm. but who knows, like, what his parents would have thought if they knew he was gay, you know?
True. It could have gone very differently had he been the kind of person that opens up.
Yeah.
But
he's not.
He's not. He's a very secretive person, very private person. Even, you know, with his family life, everything's very private. So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
That's it. That's his chart.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that a lot of it matched up.
Mm-hmm. In a very creepy way.
And just disgustingly hard, enough, especially with all the mention of children within his chart.
So much kid stuff.
So much kid stuff.
Like, why?
Because he is who he is. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I think it was a really interesting chart. And I think for who he was and the awful shit he did, I think that a lot of that was actually kind of came out a little bit in the chart, at least, you know, personality-wise.
I think a lot of it was pretty spot on.
Yeah. Well, that's what we have today. Thank you so much for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Check out our Instagram at Killer Stargazing for our killer cocktails, recipes, photos of the story we're doing that week, etc. And please shoot us an email. Let us know what you think, who we should do next, any interesting stories you have, or if you just want to say hi at killerstargazing@gmail.com. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye, guys.